Big Night is likely to change Stanley Tucci's image in Hollywood. Tucci has played heavies in such films as Kiss of Death, The Pelican Brief, and Billy Bathgate. The TV series Wise Guy helped launch his career and show off what an effective bad guy he could be. More recently, the TV series Murder One widened his following. He starred as the accused murderer Richard Cross. I asked Tucci what he wanted to do in Big Night that he wasn't able to do in his previous roles.
I wanted to carry a picture, meaning, you know, play the guy who we follow from beginning to end. I wanted also to try to create an ambiguous leading man, a man who was not incredibly heroic. And so often in films, I think particularly American films, we see the leading man is always some sort of hero, and he is without a lot of faults, and I wanted this character to be very human and to see if the audience would indeed care about him.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you tired of playing the heavy in movies also?
I'm so tired of it, I can't tell you.
It's too bad. You know, I really like you as the heavy. Does that bother you to hear me say that?
No, it doesn't. No, I'm very flattered. And I really, listen, I have no problem playing the heavy if it is an interestingly written role, if there's a complexity to it, if there's a humanity to the
mm-hmm,
role.
Mm-hmm.
What I do have difficulty with is that so often I'm asked to play the heavy only because I'm Italian. And I think that happens very often to a lot of Italian American actors. It's the prevailing view of the Italian American in Hollywood is a pretty bleak one. And it's something that won't go away. It's been around since really film began. And that's what I'm tired of. That's what I'm tired of most of all. If I can have a varied career, and I've been very lucky. I mean, I've done a lot of different things, but inevitably there's always that mafia stuff that keeps cropping up. And one of the reasons we made this picture is to change that.
Now, it's funny. I mean, the two things that Italians are associated with most in movies mm-hmm. are organized crime and mm-hmm. pasta, right?
Right.
So you're rejecting the organized crime thing, but you are kind of heading in the pasta direction, if you know what I mean. It's a film very
right.
much about food and a certain
right.
kind of Italian obsession with the preparation of food.
Right. Yeah, it is. Although we do use risotto at the beginning.
Yes, that's right. And yeah. the clientele is very angry because it's not a big portion, and they even ask for pasta on the
right,
side.
Right, exactly. You know, we're not giving them pasta, only if it's appropriate. And that's sort of the point of the film is it's fine, and we love pasta, and I love pasta. I go through withdrawal if I don't have it every couple of days, but let's have it when it's appropriate. And so what we're saying is let's have those images of Italians. Let's bring those things into play when they are organic to the story. Let's not impose them on the film or the characters.
While you were writing and then shooting the film, did you go to a lot of restaurants to get to get a sense of the atmosphere in different restaurants and the people there and just pick up
yeah.
on little things?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For years and years and years, it went on. I ended up peeking at Le Madre in New York, which is this great restaurant on 17th Street. And I met a guy named Johnny Scapin, who has since become a friend. He's the head chef there. And I worked with him for like a year and a half, on and off, in the kitchen. And he taught me a great deal. But before that, I had gone to all different kinds of restaurants, and I would always make notes and talk to people, torture the owner or, you know, the waiter or whomever, asking endless questions. And it was fascinating, I have to say. It was so fascinating. And it let me know that we were on the right track when we were writing.
In the movie, you're not the chef. I mean, you're the you're the business oriented brother.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times when you're in the kitchen slicing vegetables or, you know, whipping up eggs, and you slice and whip with the confidence of somebody who really knows how to cook, who's very familiar with the kitchen. Is this something that you learned from understudying the chef?
Yes, yeah, I did. I mean, I have always cooked. I mean, I grew up in a family that is food obsessed. So, you know, I was always cooking and learned how to cook, but I really learned from this guy a great deal, you know, how to chop. You know, it was, you know, I'd go in and start chopping an onion at first, and it was really humiliating. You know, he was a nervous wreck that I was going to cut my fingers off. But he taught me a great deal, yeah, to be comfortable around that space. And I had to be comfortable around that space as an actor, but also as a director. I had to be able to tell people what to do and where I put the camera and so on and so forth. So it was very important that I knew as much as possible.
What was your food like at home when you were growing up?
Great. Just incredible. In fact, I'm trying to put together like a cookbook now with my mother and Johnny, because I really want her recipes and the recipes of my family to be known, because it was just such a great way to grow up. The food was incredible. My mother became an incredibly sophisticated cook over the years. And, you know, I'd bring these enormous lunches to school, these sort of gourmet meals, you know. And everybody else said,
What would you take to school? I had tuna fish on white bread a lot. What did you have?
No, I never had that. No, I had tuna fish, but it was usually on a nice Italian bread, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, all different things. You'd bring a veal cutlet sandwich or an eggplant sandwich or, God knows what, you know, so much stuff. And I was very thin and small, but I ate for 10 men. So I would bring my lunch in a, you know, when you go to the grocery store and you get like a regular bag for your groceries, that's what I brought my lunch in, because like the little lunch bags were too small to fit all the food I had. So maybe it's disgusting, but I ate like a king.
Now there's an entire scene in your movie toward the end that's what's happening in the scene. I mean, there's an emotional subtext, of course, but what you actually see in the scene is your character breaking eggs, beating the eggs, putting the eggs and oil into the frying pan, flipping the eggs, putting them on the plate, eating them. This all happens in real time.
Right.
And I thought that was actually kind of brave, you know, to spend that much time following your character making these eggs. And again, there's a lot of emotional stuff happening beneath the surface, but there's no dialogue during the scene. There's no music. It's just completely quiet. Tell me about that scene.
Well, it seemed, in a way, it was an experiment, I guess. It seemed, first of all, the best way to get across what we wanted to get across. After the brothers have this huge scene on the beach, it seemed
fighting.
It seemed, what were they going to say? And you know, so many things run through your head. And my cousin and I, as I said, we wrote this together. And you think, well, this could happen, that could happen, this could happen. What could they say? And we realized nothing. Best if they say nothing. So, but what was very important to me was after the cacophony that goes on during the party sequence and the fight on the beach and the stimuli that's sort of coming at the audience and that the characters in the film are getting, we need to go back to square one, and we need to see the effects on these people of this night that they've put together. And the best way to do it was to just show them going about the most simple act and cooking the most simple thing. And also to have my character cook, because he's not the cook, and to have him cook eggs seemed to be appropriate. It's a beginning to me.
Did you have anybody tell you this scene goes on too long? You should just like do some inner cutting so you don't have to watch the eggs from beginning to end.
Oh sure, yeah, but I didn't listen to him, because I knew it worked, and I knew it would work. And even when we had the when we showed people the script, you know, they'd see the script and they'd say, well, this is great, but, you know, where's the ending? And you say, well, that is the ending. I say, well, yeah, but, you know, what does that mean? So, I don't know what it means, you know, but there's no dialogue, there's no this. And I say, well, it will work. I know it'll work, and you have to trust me as an actor. I know the kind of information that I can get across in somebody like Tony, who's so good, and Mark Anthony, that we can get across just with our bodies. And by the end of the film, the audience should know the character so well that they should be almost like a family member or like a lover. So they should know that when I walk into a room or Tony walks into a room, if our head is turned a certain way, if our body is like this, they know what we're feeling. And you should be able to watch that. If you care about them, you should be able to watch it really forever, I think, like you watch somebody that you care about, like you can watch someone you care about forever. So yeah, people did say, you know, don't, maybe this, maybe you could put the credits over that or something horrible, you know, and I'd say, no, it's okay. And it's very interesting in the theaters. I mean, we took a big chance. I mean, but it's very interesting in the theaters. You can hear a pin drop. And I'm so thankful because I didn't do any coverage, you know.
tell what coverage means.
Coverage meaning that I didn't go in for any close-ups. I didn't shoot Mark Anthony from another angle and then shoot me and then shoot Tony entering and all that stuff. It's one take, and that's all there is to it. And either it was going to work or it wasn't going to work. And if it didn't work, then I was really screwed.
Now, you had to think of editing and pacing in this movie in the way that you've never had to before, because, you know, in the past you've just been acting your role and you don't have to worry about the larger film process. What did you do to get a sense of editing and pacing? I mean, did you go back and study certain films that you particularly love?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Over and over and over again.
Which were the
and
films then, you looked at over and over?
Well, there's a handful of them that I kept going back to. And I'd sort of try to look at other films, and then I'd just keep going back to these movies. La Dolce Vita was one. 8 and a Half was another. A Sunday in the Country by Tavernier is one. Rules of the Game, Raging Bull, films like that.
What doesn't fit in this picture category? Raging Bull. I mean, there are some scenes, like the boxing scenes, that are so quickly cut.
Right.
And that's really different from the pace of your film or from the other films that you've mentioned.
Yeah, it is. But also, if you look at the dialogue scenes, I mean, the lengthy dialogue scenes,
True.
They're so beautifully shot.
True. Right.
A lot of masters, and the coverage is very simple and straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Manhattan was another film, in fact, that I would go to because of almost the entire film is master shots. It's so beautifully constructed, and the pacing is so beautiful.
You said that one of the reasons why you wanted to direct is that you were tired of directors who didn't know how to talk to actors.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the typical problems you've faced when communicating with directors?
Well, I think that a lot of directors will come from a technical background. And that's fine for certain aspects of the film, but there's a huge aspect that, you know, we're leaving out, which is the actors and how they move within the space and how they communicate with each other and how they get your point across. I think the struggle that we all found, and, you know, Campbell felt the same thing, Steve Buscemi, who just directed his own film, I know feels the same way, is that they deal with actors, they speak very generally. And they'll use words like, you know, your attitude in this scene or... I don't even know what else. I mean, because the language is so nebulous. But they really don't understand, most of all, what they don't understand is physicality. And that's why I think you see a lot of coverage, because they only can concentrate on the faces and the words as opposed to the actor's physicality and the space that surrounds the actor and the space that exists in between the actors physically. That is just as important as the close-up to me and the words that are being spoken. And that was something in this film that we wanted to try to make use of. And it's really, I guess, like an older style of filmmaking. But we trust actors, or we love actors.
Why don't you explain the expressions coverage and master shots?
Okay. Master shot is usually a wide shot, meaning you put a wide angle lens on and you can see all of the action that's happening in the room and you play the scene from beginning to end. Coverage would be then going in for specific moments, going in with tighter lenses. You would go in and do something like a medium shot, which would be, let's say, from the waist up, and then you would go into a close-up. And you usually go into the close-up on the more poignant moment of the scene, the medium shot for the middle of the scene, and the master shot for the opening of the scene. That's a standard sort of formula.
Now, as an actor, what are some of the things that you like and don't like about the close-up versus the master shot?
What I don't like about the close-up is I feel that it's really overused. I feel that what it does is it gives everything the same weight if it is overused. If you're going to use it, it must be used sparingly. As much as I love people's faces, I love their bodies equally as much. And a person's hand or their foot can tell as much as their eyes, I think. So I like to be able to see the whole picture when the whole picture should be seen. I don't think You know, everything should be in a master shot.
My guest is Stanley Tucci, and he co-directed, co-wrote, and stars in the new movie, Big Night. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Stanley Tucci, and he co-wrote, co-directed, and stars in the new movie, Big Night. Now, a lot of our listeners know you from the role of Richard Cross, the billionaire murder suspect in Murder One.
Right.
How did you get that part?
Well, it all happened at the same time we got the money for the movie, so it was a very sort of hectic time. I auditioned for another part. I auditioned for the part that Dylan Baker played in the series. And they said, why don't you try reading this other part? It was written for like a 60-year-old man, and I thought, thanks a lot. You know? I mean, I've lost my hair, but I mean, come on. So I read it, and they wanted me to play it, and they adapted the role for me. They made him a little younger, thank God. And so I actually turned it down first because I was afraid that I couldn't do both things. But the schedule worked out just fine. The guys at Reicher, who produced our movie, gave the okay that I could be shooting the film during the pilot during a small portion of our pre-production period, and then I would edit the film in L.A. I would shoot the series in L.A. and I'd edit the film in New York, and that was sort of a nightmare. But that's how it all came about. And Stephen Bochco was just, and the people there were extraordinary. I mean, they really helped work around my schedule, which wasn't easy.
Now, this one trial lasted all season, and viewers didn't find out if you did it or not until the very end. When did you find out?
Well, I had to lie to the press for a long time and say that I didn't know what was happening. But I did know after, the third episode or something, because I was very frustrated. I went to them and I said, look, this is very hard for me to do. I don't know what the hell is going on. How am I supposed to act this? You know, besides I have jet lag all the time, you know, what can I do here? And Stephen called me in and said, look, this is basically what's going to happen, I think. And I said, okay, that helps me. And then I lied to everyone, including the cast members.
Wow.
But I found out later that they all had been told things. But I still didn't really believe them when they told me. I thought they were making it up just to make me feel better because he really wanted to keep it a secret. And I don't blame him. You know, he's got a lot riding on it.
So the acting problem that the secrecy posed for you is that you didn't know if you didn't know if you were guilty or innocent, you didn't know whether you were covering up or telling the truth.
Right. Yeah, and I mean to me it was that, but it was even more than that. I needed to know a little bit more about the character and the relationships between everyone, and they weren't really giving that out. So that was really important to me. To me it was also you know, if you're guilty, you're going to act like you're innocent. And if you're innocent, you're going to act like you're innocent. So it doesn't really make a difference if you know or not, in a way. So it was really more the relationships.
But the difference is if you're innocent, you'll just be innocent. Whereas if you're guilty, you will act innocent. There'll be a certain amount of acting involved, right?
No. You have to be innocent. You can't act innocent. You have to be innocent.
No. But I mean, the real person would be acting innocent. And wouldn't you want to pick up on the fact that they're being a little phony there, that they're acting innocent as opposed to just being innocent?
No. Because then it gives it away.
Uh-huh.
Then you give it away, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, if I'm guilty and I give away to the audience that I'm acting innocent, well, then the show's over.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to completely be innocent, whether I know that I'm... I mean, I did find out that I wasn't guilty, of course, so, you know. But even when I didn't know I was guilty, I was assuming that I was going to be the guy for a while, you know. I just pretended I was completely innocent.
Do you know what your next movie is going to be? Do you have plans to write and direct another one?
I do. I wrote a film that's a farcical comedy. I wrote it while we were trying to get the money for Big Night. And I actually was hoping I'd be in pre-production right now or shooting right now.
Gee, I'm not keeping you, am I?
No. But the money fell through.
Oh.
So we're out trying to get the dough again, and
right.
it's looking pretty good. So I hope it happens, but it'll be with a lot of the same people, and then some more on top of that. I just hope to have a little more money this time,
right?
So I don't have to take another job. During the editing process.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Stanley Tucci co-wrote, co-directed, and stars in the new movie, Big Night.